back to the La Crosse Show with Paul Rabel and Paul Carcaterra.
Welcome back, everyone. Happy Monday. And on the other side of the break, I mentioned this is our first guest, PR, that we've had back-to-back weeks just because he was spitting so much game the week before that we had to get him on. Well, the pressure is on. Terry, are you there?
I am ready for the pressure, Paul.
You know, it was a great segment last week, and PR and I agreed that we had to get you back on just because it was jammed in that 15-minute segment. And I know there was a bunch of things that you really felt pretty strong about in regards to the sport and maybe where it's headed in the next year or so. And you and I were exchanging some text messages after the show last week, and there was a few real strong bullet points that I thought that were significant in our sport. One is the calendar, and every single year you have people when February lacrosse rolls around, everyone has their arms up in the air. Why are we playing in the snow? Why are we doing this? And everyone says push the season back, but you actually had some good bullet points in detail as to why and how you can do it. So let me know.
All right. Well, I think that the first thing, it's important to understand why the calendar has moved up so considerably over the last 5 to 10 years. And it's really a function of the way in which two things. The first is Division I men's lacrosse programs have been added further south, and a lot of those programs are taking advantage of the better weather to start practicing earlier and hosting higher quality matchups than they'd be able to get if they were trying to, you know, play, say, for example, High Point in High Point, North Carolina, has hosted Delaware and Towson in early February in recent years. They would struggle to get those programs to come down to them in late March and April when, you know, the Delawares and Towsons of the world, you know, traditional, top-tier to mid-tier quality programs in the sport are, you know, playing against their traditional rivals in the Mid-Atlantic region. And then the second thing is the increase in conference play, particularly how important it is, and as a result, how much college lacrosse coaches have put an emphasis on winning those games to, you know, clinch an opportunity to play in their conference tournament with hopes of getting an AQ to the NCAA tournament. So those two reasons have been why the sport has moved forward earlier into the calendar. It's a problem not just because the crowds are small, because it's cold outside, and the play isn't as good because a lot of times the weather is bad and you know, it's cold and snowy, but also fans aren't ready for lacrosse when college basketball is reaching its pinnacle. And so I do think that it's an issue for the sport. So I think that there's another kind of side issue that's going on, and it's about the, you know, decrease in attendance at the Final Four. I see these two issues being hand in hand because it's essentially the end of the season and the start of the season. I think that there's an opportunity as we reevaluate the Final Four going forward to, instead of playing it on its traditional Memorial Day weekend, move the championship game 2 weeks into June and utilize Memorial Day weekend as an opportunity to play the highest number of games. And I think that it would be great if Division I lacrosse coaches and the NCAA considered that being the first weekend of the NCAA tournament and utilizing it as the playing the first-round matchups. It's a 16-team tournament, so playing 8 games on Friday and Saturday, and then immediately turning around and playing the quarterfinal matchups on Sunday and Monday, utilizing the holiday day as an opportunity to, you know, play more games in different potted venues all across the country, and then utilizing the later start time to move back and create a formal start date for the beginning of practicing games at the beginning of the season, which the sport currently does not have.
I like it, man. I like it. Sign me up. How about you, Paul Rabel?
I think that's interesting. I also think you end up saving costs on travel, which is a line item that the NCAA is looking at, especially if you were to doublehead that first round and quarterfinal matchup. Terry, you talked about conferences in our sport, and there's continued conversation around major conferences that are targeting lacrosse. What's your kind of hope and realistic take on this in the next 5 years?
I look at the relationship between conferences and athletic departments as very much a the employee leads the way. And it's interesting because it's similar to the way that, you know, the NFL commissioner works for the NFL owners. The NFL commissioner's job is to set the direction, but he has to do so at the behest of the owners. A conference commissioner's job is to set the direction of his members, but it's at the behest of the athletic directors and the presidents of these universities. I think that the conference for which there is the largest likelihood of considering adding men's lacrosse right now is the Pac-12 for two significant reasons. maybe a third. The first is that they are in a growth phase. They are, under the direction of Larry Scott, very aggressive in identifying new opportunities, both through television and ancillary elements like that. The second is that these athletic departments, whether they be Stanford, Oregon, some of the other traditional powers, are very large. And when you compare them to programs in the Big 12 and the SEC, to other conferences that don't currently have many college lacrosse programs, those athletic departments are a little bit smaller. And as a result, large athletic departments, we've seen this over time, have greater capacity to add lacrosse as a sport. They have greater ability to be Title IX compliant, and a lot of times they have more streamlined services to keep the cost of the men's lacrosse program down. Not only that, the additional element is that the Pac-12 has already announced that they will add women's lacrosse in 2018. So there's a little bit of infrastructure there as well. And then the third element is that the Pac-12, with the addition of Colorado and Utah, and certainly its dominance up and down the West Coast, has a higher concentration of burgeoning lacrosse participation at the youth and high school level than other parts of the country that would be dictated by other conferences. So I have my eye on the Pac-12 as a target to consider the addition of men's lacrosse programs. But getting back to the original point about the relationship between the conference and the universities, while the conference commissioner and the conference office might see this as a good and viable option, it's not necessarily their responsibility to sell individual athletic directors and university presidents on the adoption of a sport. I think that that's the dynamic that'll be interesting to see how it's navigated going forward. This is the type of thing that has to come from the university level up to the conference level. And now, we've seen some progress, particularly at Utah over the last year with the consideration or taking steps towards adding men's lacrosse. And the question that I have is, can you see that proliferate, particularly starting with the universities that currently have women's lacrosse? I mentioned Stanford and Oregon. You would also include USC, who recently added women's lacrosse, and Arizona State, who's going to add women's lacrosse in the coming years as well.
It's Terry Foy from Inside Lacrosse. Fascinating stuff, mentioning the next power conference that would make sense lacrosse-wise. The Pac-12, and also, Terry, you look at the growth of lacrosse from its roots, and it's absolutely exploding out west in California, even in places like Utah, Colorado, Arizona. There's a foundation with the youth there, and I honestly think, and I've said it before too, if the Pac-12 had men's lacrosse, it would officially be a coast-to-coast revolution with the game and be an unbelievable seismic shift in our sport and in terms of the exposure. Terry, you look at some of those interesting pieces with the calendar that you mentioned and pushing back the college game. We mentioned the conferences. If I anointed you the czar of lacrosse and you could make another decision or two, like, what is on the top of your mind that you feel that needs to change with this game?
It's about formalizing a set of rules that can bring women's lacrosse and men's lacrosse closer together. I think that right now, in too many people's minds, they're viewed as two different sports. And we've seen this in no greater numbers than in recent weeks and months as the adoption of headgear in women's lacrosse has become more formalized, particularly with the recent announcement of Cascade offering a women's lacrosse headgear product. That conversation has moved to the forefront. I was skeptical about the idea of lacrosse in the Olympics for a very long time. I thought that it was a little bit of a red herring, maybe a little bit of fool's gold in terms of what it could mean for the growth of lacrosse on a wider scale. But I changed my opinion after watching Rugby Sevens debut in the 2016 games in Brazil and how much it captivated me. And it turned me into a rugby fan in a way that I never had been before. I think that lacrosse in the Olympics could do that for a lot of other people, turn them on to the game in a way that they never had before, not just in the United States, but globally. And I think that that is where there's so much potential. That being said, I think lacrosse is biggest impediment to getting into the Olympics, even more so than the fact that it's pretty localized in terms of where it's played right now, is the fact that in order to bring in men's and women's lacrosse, you have to bring in two games that have very different rules. And not only that, but also rules that aren't necessarily easily implemented in a format the way that an international set of competitions like that is run. So I think that continuing to analyze what types of rules could be implemented to not necessarily create the same game that men and women play, that could be a goal, for 20 to 40 years down the line. But right now, what can we be doing to create games that fall somewhere in between men's and women's lacrosse that are fun to play, easy to access all across the world, and are true to the spirit of the game?
Yeah, that's a great point. And I imagine
Terry's on fire, man.
Yeah.
Dropping absolute heat.
Yeah, I imagine in your 20th anniversary issue that's coming out that you guys are really excited about, Terry, Olympics probably falls into one of the areas that you're predicting in the next 20 years, I think is part of what you guys are going to deliver to the lacrosse audience. What are some other things that you guys are really excited about predicting, at least, that could have a significant impact in our sport over the next 20 years?
Well, certainly the proliferation of the game at the NCAA level, as well as at the international level, are two pinnacle opportunities. But I also think that there are two other things that I think we're going to see develop in meaningful ways over the next 20 years. And thanks for the shout out. I appreciate it. We're very excited about this issue, like you said, Paul. And that is the continued development of the professional game. I think that this is another area in which we see a competing sense of what professional lacrosse is, kind of presenting problems as it relates to its growth. And I'm speaking specifically to the idea of pro indoor lacrosse and pro outdoor lacrosse, and the way in which those entities have opportunities to work together, and the way in which the spirit of the game makes it too difficult for them to work together. And I think that that's some place where we will see formalization or unification over the course of the next 20 years. And I have no concept of what that will look like, but it's exciting for me because I think that it will further allow the opportunity for the game to be played in a meaningful way by players all across the country. And, I mean, honestly, I would love to see the idea of a professional lacrosse league somewhere in Europe as well, that gives currently amateur players in Europe the opportunity to play the game at least in a formalized way that's similar to the way that young American and Canadian players are able to aspire to now. And then the other element that I'm really interested in following the progression over the next 20 years is how recruiting is done for college lacrosse. And I think that, you know, we've seen a shift over the last 5 to 10 years, and I think, Paul, you're very familiar with an event in Maverick Showtime that is probably the exception that, in my opinion, proves the rule, but a conversion from utilizing individual recruiting tournaments and events and showcases into a club team-based structure. And I think that that's on the heels of, you know, the 1980s and 1990s, when the majority of recruiting was done through high school teams. I'm interested to see how that continues to develop going forward, what it does for the sport overall. And it's another instance in which I don't feel like I have any meaningful answers, but I do think that the way that that changes is going to be exceptionally impactful on what lacrosse looks like 20 years from now.
Fascinating, fascinating stuff. Terry, we're going to have to bounce here in just a second. In 30 seconds, if you could kind of give me what your take is on Navy lacrosse. They were on the cover of your last issue of Inside Lacrosse. We actually have their defensive coordinator, Ryan Wellner, on the show later on. So I just want to hear from someone who was part of that issue. There's a big fan base at Navy. They made it to the national quarterfinals this past season, had one of their better years in the last decade. So where is Navy lacrosse in regards to the overall place in the game right now?
In my opinion, they're a top 10 program that's rounding the bend. And what I mean by that is that after some tumultuous years under the early part of Rick Soule's tenure in Annapolis, they have stabilized who they are. They have formalized their identity within that program. That coaching staff knows who they are and how they fit into the Navy lacrosse community, which is very unique. And I think that as a result, they have the opportunity to take advantage of all the strengths of the program that helped them get to the national championship game in 2004 and apply it going forward. And I think that there's a lot of reasons for optimism and excitement if you're a fan of Navy lacrosse.
Yeah, especially if you like defenders and Chris Fennell and guys like Reese, Matt Reese, a defenseman, obviously his brother, the midfielder with the big gun too. So a lot of talent at Navy, and we'll have their coach on the other side of the break. Terry, awesome, awesome stuff. We love having you on the show, and we'll do it again in the spring.
Sounds good, guys. Thanks for having me.
It's Terry Foy from Inside Lacrosse, and I mentioned before PR. Dropping heat, man. So
yeah, it was great.
So well thought out, calculated. It's just not—he's not throwing stuff at the wall. Like he's got a plan for everything too. That's why I love talking to him, and I think it's great that we have minds like that in the game who continue to push forward. So on the other side of the break, Terry mentioned Navy lacrosse, where they are right now in the overall landscape of college lacrosse. He looks at them as a top 10 program heading into the 2017 campaign, and their defensive coordinator Ryan Wellner on the other side of the break. This is the Lacrosse Show on Sirius XM, Channel 84, College Sports Nation.